Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and broad news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And it's a very wet Monday late afternoon, but Edwin is still with me. Hello, Edwin.
Well, I had to swim to the studio, Martin.
It is pretty amazing. I've got things shut down here, but I can still hear the rain thundering down. It's pretty amazing, really.
Yeah, so. you're getting all the overflow from the mountains in Thirroul there. But look, riddle me this, Martin. Yeah, what's we've got? Which one's worse? Missing radioactive isotopes, missing prime minister, or the fear of missing boat with property purchases with such low numbers? Which one's worse?
Well, I have to say that there's something quite weird going on with the market at the moment, because in some areas, the FOMO is big. Mate, the force is with you, or the force is with them, you know.
We're going to look at the numbers later on, but and we're going to compare the 2021, January 2021, 22 and 23. But, we'll have a look at those for sure. But, look, I reckon the fix is in, Martin. It's in. There's so much happening in the media that we could talk about. We're just going to be rehashing a lot of the stuff that you and I have been predicting, more or less, as to what was going to be happening anyway. But you and I both know that, you know, no politician in Australia, in New Zealand maybe, you know, is in Tasmania for that matter, is really willing for this market to have a hard landing. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff being thrown at it, and now we're getting some support from Xi Jinping.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the latest on the old student front, right? Snap Chinese edict to send students are rushing back to the Australian campuses. I was listening to the education guys this morning saying, well, we'd like a bit more notice, but we'll try and do our best. So basically, all of these people have to come back. I wonder where they're going to live. That's an interesting question, isn't it?
Well, look, the whole event that just basically happened overnight, no different to the COVID policies that they're running there in China. They really want to kick the students out of there. I guess their thought is, look, if we can get rid of them, we're not going to have any more demonstrations, because the last demonstrations were run by the students. If we can get rid of as many as possible out of the country, we know that they're going to turn into ghost migrants anyway. So they'll be throwing some money back into our economy through WeChat and through WeChat Wallet and so forth. But the interesting thing, there's so much chaos around it, and some of our the agencies that we deal with over there in Guangzhou, it's, yeah, they're saying that they've literally received hundreds of applications for students, for student visas. These are agencies that help them with accommodation as well. And it is the pressure that is going to come on around these tertiary education hubs, it is just phenomenal. But it's really saved Harry. Harry Triguboff is dancing, they tell me. You know, he's partying in the rain. He's dancing in the, you know, singing and dancing in the rain.
Yeah, well, of course, it's interesting, because in this article that was talking about this with Education Minister Jason Clare saying, yeah, you know, a few issues, but may also help to ease the worker shortage. Eureka! Problem solved.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, so much for the locals, getting pay, any form of pay rises. But look, it's like, look, you and I said the fix was always in. It's in. It's going to be interesting to see what the local chatterers do that before. There's some interesting commentary happening at the moment around what they're going to do. One of them, which is, look, it is a sad state of affairs when now you've got big investment groups amongst the WeChat chatterers, the local Chinese groups. Now they're saying, the ones that are on a fixed term lease that are about to reach their tenure or expire, they're going to be kicking the tenants out, because now rather than getting $500 a week for a two-bedroom apartment in Parramatta, now that could literally you know, get 650, 700 because they're looking back at converting two-bedroom apartments into three, if not four, dwellings and putting double bunks in order to charge per student, which they can do. They do it. We know it's done constantly, and they're going to do it again. So, and those that have tenants, your normal tenancies in at play, but they've lapsed the fixed term tenure or the lease terms. They're basically going to be giving their marching orders, the 90-day notice to vacate, no grounds notice, and they're going to be out in the street. So, what's the state government going to do? Is anybody even talking about the shit that's gonna hit us, or are they really interested? Yeah, or is Albanese, Albo and the gang with the parates and everything, are they just sitting back and counting the dollars that are going to be coming in by way of rental increases to their properties?
Well, it makes you wonder, doesn't it, how this all is going to play out, because it's going to increase this demand for property. It's going to create more and more, slicing up properties into smaller and smaller pieces, right? Smaller and smaller rooms, et cetera, et cetera. It's not really going to solve the fundamental issue, because, of course, we know that the rents are still running very hot at the moment. So you can see how it's creating way more issues. And I don't see any solutions from government, either at a state or a federal level, that really tackle the strategic risks and issues here.
No, and there are other issues at play as well, other than your shortage of accommodation. Properties that are fit for use. In other words, we're going to have properties or unit blocks that have been badly built over the last decade or so that are fire hazards, respiratory hazards, long-term issues on the current tenants, let alone when you're going to amass double the amount of tenancies in one unit block. Can you imagine what's going to happen there? Like the lifestyle. I spoke in the about 12, 13 years ago, I started talking about it, putting out videos on the million-dollar ghettos, and this is just coming to play. And it's only, and as they say, the shit's only going to get worse.
Absolutely. Now, unfortunately, all the indicators are pointing in the same direction. It's not a good direction. And interestingly, of course, it's in the context of some first-time buyers now being squeezed. I did a show the other day looking at the drop in prices, say 10 or 12% from their peak, relative to the reduction in borrowing power, which is now down up to 30%. So many first-time buyers are now left stranded with no ability to be able to get into the market, despite the fact they may have a reasonable deposit. And, of course, the other factor there is that the HEM, the Household Expenditure Measure, is also responding now to the inflation-driven rising costs, which is another negative as well. So they just can't borrow anything like what they want. So you've got this really crazy situation where you've got a flood of people coming in and another flood of people who can't buy. And so the proportion of first-time buyers dropping like a stone at the moment. This is just a sign of a sick market again.
Yeah, look, and the thing is, Martin, that creating, I guess, if I could use the term, the undercurrent that's supporting these prices, in my view, are your very, very low listing numbers on market for sale across Sydney. Well, Melbourne's a different kettle of fish. Yep. And you've got this state interstate migration. So you've got people coming from the north and people coming from the south, into New South Wales, have been coming for various reasons coming in. You've got the regional areas that have been absolutely devastated with natural catastrophes, and the people are moving in. So that's put this pressure on the rental market, upward pressure on the rental market, and very, very, very low, next to nothing in some areas, vacancy rates, and you see lines of 10, 20 groups of people attending an open home. But this is just a couple of conversations with agencies, and this is just an anomaly somewhat, but I'm going to form a bit of an opinion around this, right? So I had two conversations with two senior property managers in agencies in the mountains, and both have said to me that the asking rental prices from the mid mountains up to Katoomba have been reducing over the last 8 to 10 weeks, right? So, and they're getting more properties advertised for rent than they were previously. One of them was going to load 6 new rentals up for lease, and the inquiry has dropped by more than 60% over the last month. So that's interesting, but then I started thinking about, you know, the migration back into the city, back into the commercial hubs by people, because I think people are sort of taking it easy now and saying, well, we can go back into the congested areas in the, you know, the commercial hubs. They want to be closer to work and so forth. So there's been that migration as well. So my thoughts are that in about three to six months on, we're going to see the rental of the people looking for rentals coming back up the mountains, because in the mountains we got to, you know, a lot of the agents here were telling us that they got down to 0.2% at one stage. You couldn't get a dwelling, but now all of a sudden you've got choice everywhere. So I guess in a way, Martin, there's also I'm a little bit spoiled effect, where people don't want to, that they want to go and live in a studio in Paddington, but yeah, pay $500 a week or $600 a week rent, but they don't really necessarily want to be a little bit further out, and let's say that they want to be in your Castle Hills or your Parramatta's or your Penrith, but they don't want to live bit further afield. As I say to our followers and our viewers, look, you've got to make this some sacrifice. You can't have it all. You can't have it all. And the other anomaly that we're going to be talking about is, you've got as you're saying, it's harder for people to borrow money for first time buyers to come in. But we knew that it was going to get harder for first time buyers with the Perrottet effect and every other government grant that was being thrown at them for the last year or so by both sides, in future promises of more. We said he was only going to raise the value of properties, but yet we are seeing in your black towns, in your Penriths, in your, you know, in your hills areas, in your Kellervilles, we're seeing insane amounts of people turn out for the auctions and actually bidding on the auction, and a lot of them are first home buyers or your upsizers or downsizers. So it's there's a lot of stuff that's not necessarily making sense on the surface, but when you start breaking things down, you start looking at who's buying, but this particular one that we're going to talk about, this property in Blacktown, which went for an insane price, in my view, you look at the groups of people that are buying are groups of people that that are prepared to have, you know, two generations living in the same household, or you've got three incomes, but yet they're buying it under a first-time buyers. The people on title are the first-time buyers, and everybody else contributes to that purchase. And that's hence the reason why we're seeing that some incredible numbers are out there between that price range of your 800 to your 1.2 million, where your typical first-time buyer would want to come in. They're just being priced out because prices are just going nuts at the moment. And as you said, because they can't borrow as much as what they could 6 months ago.
Now, the multi-generational purchase is a big thing at the moment. I'm seeing it in my surveys. And what I'm finding fascinating about that is that, one income is insufficient to be able to actually get into the market. Two incomes is now a bit wobbly, but if you get three incomes or four incomes and pool it, then you can still buy, and that's exactly what's happening. So we're seeing a lot of that at the moment in terms of multi-generational purchase. The other thing you mentioned, the downtraders, this is really interesting. So I'm seeing a significant split in down traders. So these are people who want to move to a smaller property. And some people are saying, well, I think property prices are going to fall further, so I want to try and sell now and sell quick. And others are saying, no, I'm going to hang on because I think property prices will slide a bit, but they're not going to slide that far. And I'm going to miss out if I actually try and sell now. So I'm going to wait for a year or two before I actually sell. Still want to sell, still want to release equity. So there is a fundamental split at the moment amongst those down traders as to how to deal with the current move in the market. And I'm going to talk about more of that in another DFA show later on. So the point to make here, Edwin, is you have to actually look in detail at the types of buyers and what's driving them. You can't talk at these aggregate numbers, right? Which is, of course, what the mainstream is doing all the time. You need to understand the difference between the multi-faceted, multi-occupy properties and the down traders and the first-time buyers, all of those things, because the behaviours are so different.
Look, definitely. This is something that the conversations that we have with a lot of our clients in different parts of Sydney, from buying apartments in the eastern suburbs to buying freestanding homes in the Shire or northwest and west and even in the mountains and further afield, when we get called to do so. But it's unless you look at these the demographics, unless you look very, very closely, you could really be paying over the odds for, as I say, you're paying well and truly over the odds, and you've got, and a lot of the people may not have that buffer, should things get worse.
Yep.
Right? So, but what we are, we also not only, obviously, consult and we guide our clients, but we also have an opportunity to talk to the agents and see, the parties that are buying, who's buying, who, the inquiry that they have, who are making the inquiry, and I'm a little bit nosier than most, and I often find out as to, what sort of LVRs I've been talked about when they're coming to buy. So you'd be surprised as to, how much money people are coming in, and as I say, is this magnified FOMO that we're seeing on the on the ground at the moment? Is it because the people that have been sitting on the sideline for the last couple of years, waiting for the market to really tank, that just can't wait anymore? Is it also, as I say, the wife made me do it scenario with the partners just have had enough in the so buy or live in the doghouse? There's a lot of things that are driving emotionally, psychologically, financially that are driving. But look, for me, as my sacred cow that I hang on to is the fact that Sydney's not a big market. And whilst the numbers stay this low, and if they continue to stay this low, and as you say, if people start retracting or receding or holding back until they see a significant economic change where it's going to give them a bit more confidence to say that they're going to get the kind of money that they feel they deserve to get for the property that they've held for 30, 40 years, they're not going to put it on the market. So it's a bit of a stalemate. So therefore, it's slim pickings out there by way of properties that are well presented and that are a turnkey, you could say, where you're literally just going to get the keys, bring your furniture in, bring the family in, and close the door behind you, and not think about anything else. So there are a lot of properties out there that are that have got issues, and people are also somewhat reluctant to do cosmetic, let alone full renovation works.
Absolutely, yeah. Well presented properties are the hen's teeth at the moment. There's a lot of ex-rental properties that are pretty, crazy and quite a lot that need a lot of work. But let's look at this one example, right, the Blacktown example, because this is an amazing story. I wouldn't believe it if you hadn't told it to me.
Okay, this is the first video they're going to show. Now, that that's sort of the inspection that I personally, myself, and one of my team members conducted on that property with our client. Our client was there as well. And if they follow me on the on my Twitter handle, you'll see three or four videos that are posted about this particular property in October last year when it first came onto the market. At that time, I looked at the elaborate enclosure of the rear entertainment area, where they've put an extra bedroom at the back and an extra bathroom as well, and how they enclosed it. But it was sort of there was something odd about it. So I was very clear with the agent. I said, look, do you have an occupation certificate on this? And he was arming and ahhing. And at the end, I got to the bottom of it. And basically he came clean and he said, no, there's no occupation certificate, but a DA was lodged. I said, yeah, lodging a DA is one thing. Having an occupation certificate, is miles apart. Is, day and night scenario. So this is, so the videos that you're going to see there, that video that you see there is how elaborate this resection, the deck and how they enclose this pergola, and it's rather interesting. That's only one of the issues. The other issue is it's got a granny flat style accommodation, teenage retreat at the bottom with an extra kitchen and a bathroom, which has its own issues and water ingress issues, moisture ingress issues from because the property is on a slope and so forth. So, and on top of that, you've also got a high voltage power lines running across the top of the property. So half of the land is under an easement scenario. So based on the FSR, based on the on what they've done, they will never, whoever the new owner of this property will never be able to get an occupation certificate for this dwelling on all counts. But yet it went for an insane price. So the second video is the video of the current auction, and as I call it, the Parate effect.
Yeah, and this, of course, is right up to date, right? Lots of people milling around, looking very, very excited. And as you say, you point out the overhead cables, right? Buzz.
I wish I took some of Jose's little chickens' eggs there, and I could have left them on the bonnet of the car, and I would have got hard boiled eggs by the time the auction was over.
Yeah, so the property did sell at auction, right? And it exceeded expectations.
Look, it did. The guide was $950,000. Now, this time around, obviously I contacted the agent when I sort of come back on again, and I say, how are you going with that particular listing there? And he goes, oh mate, we're going to start an auction campaign soon. And I said, really? And I said, yeah. And I said, what are you going to do with regards to the, how are you going to cover your ass with regards to the fact that there's no occupation certificate? So this is why the sales fell over when it came on the market pre-December, right? Pre the end of the year, but it fell over. Our client was half interested in the property because everything was sparkly and shiny, and you could get caught up with the whole whole sparkly shiny bit of the about the property in terms of a house or a dwelling. It looks good for the area, right? Obviously the sales at that time fell over. It was on private treaty campaigns, and after people did the due diligence, they simply walked away. No different to what we did as well when we looked at it, because our client, based on the photos and what he saw online, he was he looked nice and clean and tidy, and it's something that that him and his family would appreciate living in. So this time around, the contract specifically said that the rear extension or section of the property, there was no occupation certificate. Now, after talking with town planners and so forth, this is an inside conversation here. The owners have a friend, allegedly, have a friend that's a private certifier, and they called them over to try and get an occupation certificate for the room. Once he did his search and see what had been done and everything, and he said no amount of money that you would pay me would make me basically take it off under private certification. So yeah, it could get a sense of where this is going. Anybody that owns it runs the risk of now the council coming in and telling them to basically, they'll get a demolition order on the rear and bring it back to its original state. So it's a huge expense that the people that don't do the due diligence will be up for in the short term, if not the long term.
Right, and there's actually another video that's worth playing at this point, right? This is a bit of a discussion about this whole situation.
Yeah, so what I did was, I went up to the end of it, because obviously the winning party got taken inside to sign the contract whilst things were hot, and they could get his soul on the soul in a couple of pints of blood on the contract. And I was talking to the underbidder. I just decided to approach the underbidder and have a bit of a chat with him. And that was the conversation there in the video that I sent you. And it was rather interesting. So his conveyancer, his broker, told him that it was a great property, told him that it was a great opportunity for first-time buyers, right? These are first-time buyers. And told him, great opportunity.
Yeah, that is on the contract for sale. Okay. It is that there's no occupation certificate.
Okay.
But your conveyancer didn't inform you of that.
No. So there is no occupation certificate towards the backyard extension.
That's correct.
Oh, okay.
And the granite flat at the front is in council approved as well. So your conveyancer didn't tell you that at all. Is that okay for me to comment on this conversation online? Nobody knows who you are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Basically he dodged the bullet. Him and his family dodged the bullet, Martin. And he was flabbergasted with the fact that, when I pointed out and I said, did your conveyancer point out to you that the resection of the property does not have an occupation certificate, and he point blank said no. You sort of could half understand that, you sort of could half comprehend that if it was under the previous contract where the agent was running the campaign, because he got told that there was an occupation certificate, the vendors basically lied to him and he took it at their word. He didn't do his own research as well. But he took him at their word, and you sort of could sort of say, well, I get it, but still, it's no excuse for not going looking at the contract thoroughly, and making the right inquiry into it. And this is where people get caught up, and because they show the mortgage brokers or the conveyancers. Generally, it's mainly conveyances that this community uses, and they all get excited, and obviously they all want the purchase to happen, because if the purchase happens, the mortgage broker gets their cut, get a commission, the conveyancer will get the conveyance fee. But at what price? At the price and the cost of the client, short and long term.
Yeah, absolutely. And, we keep saying this one point, isn't it? You've got to do your own due diligence. You've got to ask those hard questions. You can't really take anything for granted. And you can't really, this is a concerning thing. You can't necessarily rely on the conveyancer to actually do the full Monty, as it were. So many times I hear where people ultimately are caught by this, and there are quite significant limitations on what you can do if you're in the situation where subsequently you find a problem, because there's lots of weaselly words that the conveyancers use, etc. So you have to do this on the way in, and I know it's a bit of a pain, but it's the difference between a successful purchase and one which can be an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, look, Martin, I'm not making excuses for the conveyancers, right, or the conveyancing solicitors in what I'm about to say. But unless the purchasers inform the conveyancer that they can see extensions or additions or, you know, structural additions to the property, the conveyancers overlook a lot of that because, yeah, they don't necessarily, as you said, they don't necessarily read the contract thoroughly.
No.
So, but whereas we are trained and my staff are trained, my colleagues are trained to, you know, even if there's a pergola, we want that occupation certificate. We want that council approval. We inform the conveyancers that are acting for our clients. We inform them of any addition that we see, and they will chase the other side for the adequate documentation in order to move forward. Now, some might say, "Oh, you're being too pedantic," and this pergola that's been enclosed has been here like this for the last, I think in this case it's been like that for the last 18 months or so, right? I said, yeah, that's good and fine, because the neighbours may get along with the current buyer and they're not going to tell the council otherwise. But the problem is the new parties that move in, they may have a noisy pet, or they may have a noisy kid. They may get at odds with the neighbour. They may not like each other, and that neighbour, you know, all they need to do is make a phone call to council, and they're in a world of shit. You know, what's their option? What's their comeback? You know, so as I said, and this is what I said to our clients: yes, it's only a pergola. It may be standing here for the last 5-6 months, but you know, it only takes one neighbor to come, you know, get offside with you, and then you potentially may have issues. Now, in a lot of cases, Martin, with some of the renovation works or things that people do to the properties, you can argue with the council. You could sort of, it comes in under the specs and the regs anyway. So you could basically, you could do what we call a reverse DA.
Yep.
It's not the technical term, but it's I call it a reverse DA and try and get those approvals, which is tiresome and cumbersome, right? But in this case, you know, talking to our town planners, talking to our experts, and even myself looking at it, after understanding the easement that envelopes, you know, almost 40% of the land, you know, they've exceeded the FSR. There is no way in hell they're going to be able to get this thing approved. Hell will freeze over, you know, before this thing is given an occupation certificate. Now, this is the other the scary side, or for the current purchaser, right? If like, yeah, you, I don't know whether they are aware or not aware of the issue. But what's interesting is that the last I spoke to one of the agents that were there, they had 5 registered bidders, but I sort of got the idea that they might have ended up with about 6 or 7 registered bidders that were holding cards. So how many of those didn't get the right advice, right? But now, going back to the point that I was going to make, you've got potentially other parties that may have looked at this at the contract of sale. The conveyancers or conveyancing solicitors may have looked at the contract of sale, and they did make the right inquiry with the council. They did all the checks and balances. They did see the fact that the reception doesn't have an occupation certificate. They would have called council. They would have called the town planners in council. They would have got the thing. Now, what does that tell you? The council are alerted to the fact that there is a house with a massive extension to the rear. It's not just a you know, $12,000 pergola that's being enclosed. Yep. It's half a house.
Yep.
To the rear. What do you think the council are probably flipping a coin to see whether or not they issue the demolition orders or not?
Absolutely. And you know, just to be clear, the demolition scenario is not just smoke and mirrors, right? It can happen, and it's not just a few months. You know, this can go back a few years, actually.
Right.
So people have been caught out, not just for development in the last few months, but several years ago, if the processes weren't actually followed and if they didn't get the right approvals and you have an illegal development, the council is totally in their right to say, knock it down. And
that's right.
When you say knock it down, that's taking it down and effectively putting back the property to what it was like beforehand.
That's correct. And this includes removing stoves in the makeshift kitchens, basically making that extra dwelling area or space that you call a teenage retreat, making it so that you can't cook in there. And they'll also check out the drainage and the plumbing to see who's done it and who's basically what plumber certified. But yeah, but there's no proper certification. You know, with these extensions that people make and these makeshift extensions and granny flats that they're adding onto properties anyway. So there's no certification. So the council will basically tell you to demolish it and turn it into a get rid of the PC items or the those ancillary amenities and turn it into a storeroom.
Absolutely, and it's worth just highlighting that drainage issue, right, because effectively the guttering clearly runs around it and then goes through that little pipe at the end.
Yeah, and you've got the sewer. The main thing there is the sewer, because effectively you've got, you don't only have, four people or four adults pushing, all sorts of stuff down the sewer line, but you've also got added pressures to that. So there's all these ongoing issues around it, around sewer, around the stormwater. If they've added to the roof line, and this is where the council, like I said, all it takes is one nosy neighbour or somebody in your neighbourhood that you get offside and they dob you in, and then you're in a world of shit. You can say you could mitigate a lot of it if it sits underneath the existing roof line or the existing roof space, right? You could more or less get away with a lot, and you could argue it, and you could do this, reverse the A and get your occupation certificate, that way. But when you've got a whole half a house being added to the rear and the roof line extended and all these extra toilets and dwellings and it becomes an issue. But look, just looking at it from my first, I could see that it wasn't it wouldn't have been council approved because of the way the nature of the construction and the exposure of the gutters and so forth underneath the pergola, how they dressed it up.
Very good. Well, now let's move on to another very interesting topic, which is numbers, right? And we're going to do a little bit extra on numbers tonight because we want to make some comparisons with what's going on currently with what was going on last year at the same time, because actually there's quite an interesting story. Let's start with Sydney.
Yeah, so look back from over the last 2 weeks, the previous Monday and Monday before that, from then, what we've had is we've had a consistency growth in numbers of about 500. I say it's not enough. But personally, based on the fact that we're not under this precursor or fear or of any lockdowns anytime soon, so therefore, I would have thought that we'd pick up a bit more. But nevertheless, the numbers are going up. So from last week. Of having 15,648 homes on the market or properties on the market to 16,071, you've got the constant 500 new dwellings coming on the market, and obviously our focus is predominantly on freestanding homes, and again we see the on average about 300 new listings or listings being added onto the numbers, right? That's over this month, and now that the Australia Day long weekend is well and truly over, the people are back at work, things are sort of going back to some sort of normality. I expect, I would hope then we start sort of tracking anywhere between 500 to 700-800 new listings over the next few weeks. That is my hope, but whether that happens, we'll just I'll watch and see.
Yeah, but what's interesting, Edwin, is that, you know, those numbers sound okay, but if you go back a year, so this is Sydney on the 28th of January 2022, how many properties were on there? 15,166.
That's correct.
And if you go back to 2021, 14,080. So actually, surprisingly, there are more properties on the listings at the moment than the last 2 years at this time.
That's correct. And this is, where is this FOMO coming from? Where is this, the 76 groups turning up to some areas, 36 groups in, other dwellings and other homes and so forth. And so, where is it coming from? What's really spurred this on? Look, for me, it's none other than the infamous Perrottet effect.
Yes.
Right. In that broadband, and that's driven the market. That's pumped it up from your as I said, from your 800 to your 1.2. It's pushed the other markets that were sitting around the 1.2 to 1.5. It's sort of given them a bit of a boost as well. It's almost like like a bit of a domino effect, right? And this is what I was saying. So I really hope that these numbers start coming on a lot stronger than what they are. Next week, I guess post next week, we're going to see what people are going to end up doing, because I know the leftover group of investors that have been holding on tooth and nail. Although they're having to pay higher interest rates, and yet not being able to increase their the rents, they've been caught in that under fixed term leases. We know that that there's a lot of stress there. We know that there's how many of them come on the market is going to be a wait and see. But obviously, with that, if we start talking about apartments. Well, the shoddy, shitty apartments around Parramatta and all these other hubs where you've got this high-rise construction that basically are in on the train line for the tertiary service the tertiary educations. Well, they've been given a bit of a lifeline.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to sort of set that in context, what we're actually saying is, whilst the numbers have grown a little, they're actually a little stronger than this time last year and the year before, and there's a prospect potentially of more listings coming. So, it tells you just something different from, again, where the mainstream is, which the mainstream is saying listings have dropped, there's nothing for sale. Well, actually, there's a little bit more for sale than last year, right? So that tells you something.
Yeah, and we're using domain, and this is where the mainstream media mainly using the domain figures. So these are snapshots from my Twitter feeds from those times, and I try to keep a regular screenshots, and have been doing that over the last few years or so. So where is that commentary coming from? I think other than really people not paying a lot closer attention and not really doing the research.
Absolutely.
So what are we saying to our clients? We're saying, look, just unless we get the right deal, there's no you don't want to go toe to toe with your WeChat chatterers, and you don't want to go toe to toe with your developers have been given another lease of life, given another opportunity to buy, develop, and build quickly. The other cashed up developers because they can see that there's a bit of FOMO, and they've got this Perrottet effect or your flippers, and because you can get caught out prematurely. So because if you're looking at numbers, well, we've got more on market than what we had in those years.
Yep.
But yet when you go out there, people are just, you know, it's like they're throwing money at these auctioneers like it was confetti.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's just quickly look at the Melbourne market, because on the 23rd, there were 23,566 properties listed. And then last week, or this week, I suppose, 24,022. So still a rise. And the Melbourne market is behaving a little bit differently from the Sydney ones, aren't they?
Yeah, look, we almost got double the amount of numbers on that. But look, yeah, there's going to be more of an exodus from the Melbournians to come to a real estate, to the real Australia, I guess.
Well, yes, indeed.
And we know Robbie Barwick's there at the border trying to keep everybody back.
That's probably true. And just in terms of Brisbane, 4,939 last week and 4,975 this week. And in fact, to my mind, Edwin, the Brisbane market is looking particularly wobbly at the moment. There's a lot of high-rise apartments in and around Brisbane on the listings there, but prices are dropping faster in Brisbane than almost anywhere else at the moment, according to CoreLogic. So there's something different again happening there.
Yeah, well, I guess the apart from the fact that we've got we've got a lag with the CoreLogic indicators anyway. But look, one of the interesting things that I have been doing is reaching out to offices there in Brisbane and people that I've known over the years and another buying group up there, and in relation to apartments, they've just there's another underlying reason why people want to get out of apartments up there, and that's because the strata levy. And are just going through the roof.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you thought we'd build shit here in New South Wales, they really built shit over there in Brisbane.
Gold Coast shit particularly.
Yeah, and I mean, they really built on shifting sands.
Yeah, no, exactly
crazy right. The levies and the proposed special levies that they need to raise. It's just going to be, it's for them, it's a can of a can of worms, but I believe that a lot more the rental pressures and it's more felt here in Sydney than a lot of the other cities. They are feeling it, but I think we're feeling it a lot more because the population concentration of people in our city, as well as the place to really be short term and long term when it comes to security of business and work.
Yeah, it is interesting because I've been looking at some of the rental yields, both gross and net, in Brisbane and the surrounding areas. Over the last couple of years, they were doing quite well, so considerably higher than Victoria and New South Wales. But recently, because of the movement in rents relative to price and all sorts of other things, in fact, the yields have dropped a little bit, which is interesting. And just finally here, of course, the auction stats or the underquoting stats to quote you.
Yeah, I like you, Martin. I like you more today than what I did before. Now you're getting into the right lingo. That's it. Sale by underquoting. Look, that's it. There was an article in mainstream media that from the previous week to last Saturday, which was Super Saturday, twice the amount of properties going for auction. I think we went from 94 to 180 or some shit like that. And the mainstream media were throwing a party over it. Now, what articles are going to come out this week when you go from 183 or 184 listed auctions for sale in Sydney to 452. This is
whole new ball game.
But look, we're starting to come into that space of normality, and the trend over the last couple of years. But it's going to be our focus is on when we watch these numbers, we want to see how confident vendors are. There is somewhat, level of confidence in your local markets, in your when you start looking at things, as you use the term granularly, when you start looking at because the narrative that the agents are propagating, the conversations that they're having with the potential vendors are, look at this great price that we achieved at Killerville, or whether it be Killerville Ridge, or whether it be King's Langley, look at the great numbers. There's not enough on market. So we're going to have all these conversations filtering through, but again, it's going to how confident vendors or potential sellers are going to be is going to be dictated whether or not how quickly we get up above the 600, 700, properties that go to market via underquoting, and also how quickly we jump to your high numbers of 2022, where we were almost at 10,000 homes on the market for sale. That's going to be the telling tale, and for what it's worth, I know I joke about it, but we seriously do look at what the retail chatterers are doing, because when you've got 1,500 plus property investors across various WeChat groups that are hungry to buy and think, like I said, Sydney, can you imagine if all 1,500 of them went out tomorrow and bought a property in Sydney? I mean, that'll send a shockwave through the market because of the low listing numbers, and because in a lot of other cities across the world, 1,500 sales won't mean nothing. Much, but in Sydney it does, because we don't have a lot of properties for sale when you think about the fact that there's close to 3 million homes in New South Wales.
Absolutely, yes, small proportion, as we've said, and it's actually a small proportion, and therefore a few more or a few less has a very significant impact on the overall momentum in the market. Well, as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, your thought for the week, as it were, in terms of a very important one here, actually.
Don't get an Indian class. No, didn't say that. Cut that out. Edit that, Martin. Edit that. No, don't. Look, you better have very good professionals on your side. You need to have very good professionals on your side from a conveyancer point of view. And we're having this conversation with my colleagues over the weekend and other people as I do. And I was saying, if the solicitor is going to come back, you can only just imagine this poor bastard when the council comes knocking at his door and gives him a demolition order and says, but my conveyancer told me it was okay. Well, I'm sorry, buddy, but this is it. You sort of think the conveyancer conversation they will be having with the conveyancer, but you told me, right? And said, but you didn't pay me enough to read through the contract. Listen, conveyancers generally charge anywhere between $1,800 to $2,000 on average to do a conveyance, right? If you feel that your conveyancer isn't going to do the work, pay that little bit extra. And tell them, look, I'll pay you an extra, couple of hundred dollars more, $300 more, but you've got to look at this contract thoroughly. At the end of the day, we're not talking pittance on the other side of that equation. We're talking the devaluation of that property, in my estimate, would be at least $250,000 from what that individual paid.
Yep.
Let alone the cost to demolish and to do and the upheaval that's going to create. So, look, if it's not about getting a cheap conveyancer, it's not about getting a cheaper mortgage broker. It's not about mortgage brokers don't pay them anyway. They're paid by the lender. But you better, for God's sake, you better make sure, or a conveyancing solicitor. I know a lot of solicitors that watch your show may take me to task on this, but unfortunately, a lot of solicitors are also look at a conveyance scenario. They look at it as a extra bit of income. But you really need to have somebody that's going to be focused. And if they're going to charge you, you know, an extra $500-$600 to do that conveyance, and you're comparing it with your local conveyancer or the conveyancer of your ethnicity, that's going to charge you $1,500. Well, you know what? I would say pay that a little bit more and pay it to your conveyancer or to somebody else, but they're going to put a lot of attention to the detail that's going to be required. That it's going to be costly at the end.
No, but this is worth it. As we've said before, you know, you've really got to make sure that you do kick the tires on it appropriately. It isn't just a mechanical process of ticking boxes and, you know, filling out forms and sending them around the place, right? What you want is somebody who can actually make sure that the critical issues are addressed. And, you know, if you think of the conveyancer, the building inspector, the other parties that, you know, for example, you might want to check the electrics and the plumbing and things like that as well. I mean, all of those things cost a little bit, but at least you know what you're buying, right? Because remember, it's caveat emptor, buyer beware, right? And you can't rely on anything that the vendor says or the real estate agent says. Even if you get it in writing, it's a problem. So it really is this is the safety net. And unfortunately, quite often people, it seems to me, skimp on the safety net. And I think quite often they have no idea the risks that they're getting into by doing that. So it is worth doing it properly.
Yeah, look, they skimp on that safety net, Martin, but they're also led astray by their own friends and family because, you know, and they use the excuse, oh yeah, but he's from the same country that you're from or from the same city that you're from.
Yeah, that's right. As though that makes a difference.
I could count on two fingers how many South American professionals I've used. I should rephrase that. I've got a lot of friends that are professionals, but I wouldn't use them. Because they if you want that job done cheaply, and you're going to pay small amounts of money for something that you want cheaply, well, it comes with the consequences. You are going to get monkeys, right? So, but if you want it done properly, you're going to have to pay a little bit more. As I say, you know, some say, oh, yeah, but, you know, we only charge, you know, we can't do all that because we only charge $2,000. But I'm paying you $2,000 because you told me you're going to do a job, you know, and I want it done properly. If you don't think you're charging enough for what you need to do, up your ante, but I can't up my ante because then I don't get any work. Well, yeah. Too bad. Like that's, I don't know. It's that cycle that a lot of people in these ethnic groups need to get out of. I'm not saying that. Yeah, there's great South American professionals out there, by the way. A lot of them.
No, there are some excellent ones, but you've also got to make sure that you know what you're getting into and make sure that you've actually got people who can actually do the heavy listing that needs to be done at the time it needs to be done. It's really important, everyone, isn't it? And, you know, it's not like the purchase of property is worth 2 and 6 months these days, right? And we're paying big dollars in a moving market where we also know that there's a lot of property that's poorly constructed. We know a lot of property is not certified appropriately. And we know that a lot of people can lose their shirts. I've seen it time and again. So, you know, all you can say is understand that it's an investment to get the right professional team around you.
So the tip, I know we spoke about it before as well, so that can save fresh on people's mind, Martin. If you see a property, if you're inspecting a property and you see an addition, you see different colored bricks from the front of the property to the rear of the property or to the side of the property, you tell your conveyancer that, yeah, it appears that there's an addition being put in there. If the roof line goes from a pitch roof to a flat roof to the side or to the rear, yeah, more than likely there's been an addition. So you want to have they're your tricks, or the bit of information that would be invaluable for your conveyancer to help them do the job properly.
Yeah, great advice, Edmund. Well, thanks once again, as always. Great work and great advice. And I guess we'll all do it again next week when there's going to be ever more stuff to talk about.
Well, I hope so, Martin, and I hope to God they find that freaking isotope, because I'm a little bit scared. I'm just a little bit scared.
Yeah, well, luckily it's in WA, and WA is a long way from anywhere.
Well, something happens there. Yeah. I mean, weren't they going to secede in the 70s or some shit?
Yeah, could well. Thanks, Edwin. See you next week. See ya.